Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I'm your host, Mary Catherine Hamm. I'm here with my co-host, Vic Mattis of the Washington Free Beacon. There's a lot going on in the news, particularly SCOTUS news about that affects the 2024 election. We got crime news out of, well, all the classics. Portland, New York, San Francisco, D.C., but an unexpected twist. So we'll get to that. We've got John Fetterman. He's like, I guess, our favorite senator now. I don't know what's happening, man. But before we get to all that, oh, and an eagle story. Several eagle stories. Before we get to all of that, how are you doing, Vic?
Hello, Mary Catherine. I'm a little tired. We lost power last night for I don't know what reason, because it's not like there was a big storm. It was raining.
Yeah.
And it's one of these things where you just know it happens in the middle of the night. For some reason, something happens. And you just wake up and you look at the clock and it's just not on.
You know what I think that is? Yeah. That is an absence of a certain level of white noise that's
yes.
in your home all the time.
That must be what it is. Yeah. And it's too quiet and too dark outside. So the main street, everything was dark. And then you spend the rest of the time awake waiting for it to come back on. And then you might doze off and then you immediately check no. And then Kate's she's awake too. And she's thinking about the fridge. Because that's the first thing we all think about is the fridge.
Not me. When the power goes out in my house, I'm like, free pass, sleep it in as long as I can. Don't you have a phone that has an alarm? That's not
we
important.
We do. No,
That's
we,
not important, guys.
Yes, Kate does have a phone, but for me, I'm just wondering, what in the fridge can I keep? But no, I'm doing...
Yeah, you do want it on within just a few hours.
Yes, supposedly. Yes. I'll let that one stretch and take my chances.
Oh, same. Same.
Yeah, have some more mayo. No, I wanted to say this. My son, last week, was on a group trip to Ireland.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's right.
The home of his ancestors.
Oh, amazing.
Not mine, of course, but Kate's. And he went all over the place. Giant's Causeway and Cashel Rock and Kilkenny and Galway and Tipperary.
Oh, how cool.
Yes. It was a lovely time.
Yes.
For all. However, you know what he witnessed?
What?
He witnessed.
A bar fight.
Yeah.
Sorry.
A drunken brawl on a bridge. And he literally saw one. There was like three fellas. And he literally saw a guy get punched in the face. And
look, I was not trying to slander the Irish, and look what
well,
happened.
Well, that's what I said to...
I was joking.
You're not going to believe this, because I actually said that to Mary Catherine and to my son. I said, okay, you saw this thing, but I don't want this to color your view of the Irish people, because this is very uncharacteristic of them. Normally, the idea of a drunken brawl in Dublin.
You've seen the Notre Dame mascot. He's merely painting...
This guy?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's all. That's all it
piano.
Is.
He plays piano.
That's
I'm sure
it.
There's some
no.
reason he's doing this calisthenics.
Yeah, the calisthenics is put up your dukes. It's the old 1920s style boxing. You know, it's like him versus... So anyway, yes. So he I said, you know, not to be, you know, to besmirch the reputation of your mother's people.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he saw it, came back in one piece, had a great time.
So. Also, I love that he's still in the kid zone where that would be the highlight of a trip to Ireland.
Oh, he said
right?
it was crazy. Like, he said like, it was crazy.
You know, like when you take your kids to some wondrous thing and they're right. like, Mom, remember they had that weird sink right. in the bathroom? It's like,
you'll
well,
remember that.
We were at the Vatican, but sure, I do remember that.
Yes, the Cliffs of Moher, as well as the drunken bar fight in Dublin.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Mary Catherine, how are you? Oh, by the way, just one more other thing. They really don't like the British there. They still don't. In case you're wondering.
Well, you know, I brought up the Notre Dame
yes.
mascot, and speaking of small people who pack a punch, let me tell a story about the old toddler.
Oh.
So she is, as we have discussed, quite a handful. Very physical kid, very capable kid, independent
yes.
kid, fun. I like she really can take care of herself. You don't worry about her a lot on stairs or climbing or any of that stuff. She's got that all under control. She's not talking a ton, as we've discussed. Although she is talking quite a bit more now.
Yes.
She is repeating us. She is doing, the other day she said, yeah, repeating words that we say the other day, she put together a very nice sentence, which was, thank you, Daddy.
Oh.
Thank you. That's her thank you.
Remember those adorable phrases. You're going to write them down.
She also said, well, I'm going to say them on the podcast so we know them. This morning, she's very into rain. She wants to play in the rain, in her raincoat. She wants to.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to take an umbrella out. She wants to stand on the porch in the rain. So... She's standing in front of the doorway, and she goes, Darice, Darice, please, Darice. The duh is the.
Uh-huh.
Reese is rain. We don't know why. So, Darice, please.
Darice.
She went and played out in the rain this morning, had a blast. But that's not the story. The story is that Steve was hanging out with her, brought the kids back in from, the babies back in from a trip to the park. In our house, you have to go from the ground floor up to the main floor, right? So you come in the ground floor.
Yes.
And the big girl's room is on the ground floor. And in the big girl's room is a thing that Holly loves, which is her older sister's piggy bank. A giant purple pig, like the size of a basketball. Holly, being very strong and independent and capable, has for a while now been attached to this pig. She likes this pig, so she carries the pig around, which is treacherous because it's a toddler, right?
I also have a question. What is the pig made of?
It is ceramic, what you would imagine a piggy bank.
Oh, no, like a real? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a real, like, Chekhov's gun situation.
Yeah, I'm getting a feeling here.
So she carries this thing around, and, like, actually, we allow it. Partly because she's very capable, mm-hmm. partly because, like, do I love the giant pig? I don't love the giant pig.
Oh, so. Okay. Oh, really? You're trying to set it up for a fall.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's not like I have to protect this thing.
It's like the fishnet stocking in the Christmas story. Oh, what a shame.
Fragile. This is also a fragile. So she, unbeknownst to Steve, she's behind him on the stairs. He takes the baby upstairs, puts the baby in the living room. And while his back is turned and she's making it the rest of the way upstairs, she's carrying...
like a
this giant pig up the stairs, because again, she is very stable, very capable. She comes up the stairs, he locks the baby gate, puts the baby where the baby belongs, back turned, and he just hears g-dunk, 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 g-dunk. She has chucked the pig over the baby gate down the stairs. Now it's pretty sturdy because it's not shattering.
Yeah.
G-dunk, 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 down the stairs to the tile at the bottom, like slow motion.
So,
and then
very, very much like my groceries.
Yes.
That smashed on the yes. floor. It's
and then my child, who doesn't say that many words, goes, "Uh-oh, broke pig."
Yeah.
Broke.
Got yeah.
Pig.
Yeah.
Or I think it was more like roke
pig.
Pig.
She got that part.
I have never heard her say pig before. I've certainly never heard her say anything close to broken.
Was she surprised that, was there a lot of change inside the piggy bank?
There's not like a outlandish amount. It was a couple bucks.
A couple bucks and quarters everywhere on the floor.
I don't think she was impressed by that, but I do think she was impressed by Rook Pig.
Well, you know,
pig!
There were in the olden days, I think a lot of those piggy banks were only like, the only way you can get it out, right?
You just have to break it.
You had to break it. Like you break,
I remember actually having a bit of an existential crisis as a child, realizing that was the way you had to get it.
Because
we had one that was full and it didn't have,
strange thing.
Didn't have a little stopper.
Yeah.
It just was full of change. And I thought, I have to murder this pig.
Did
now,
I
eat bacon all the time, but I don't murder the pigs.
Did this
was a ceramic pig, but I still felt bad.
Did this pig that broke, was there a stopper, or it had to be
there
broken?
Was a stopper. Oh, kids are so.
Well.
The kids are soft these days. They can't have ones with no stopper.
Yeah, the idea,
so.
I had one. It was Pinocchio. It was a Pinocchio piggy bank with a stopper, and it was plastic, so there was no chance of that breaking.
Yeah, you were okay.
Ever.
I had a couple of little, like, you know, ceramic or whatever they were made of. I think they're ceramic. Piggy banks as a kid, and one did not have a stopper, and I just found it sort of disturbing.
Well, I'll tell you what's disturbing, by the way, is that piggy bank, for some reason, that I had when I was a little kid, the Pinocchio one, it somehow made its way into our home here in Virginia. And
is it sentient?
Yeah, well, I mean, and my son didn't want it, so at some point I opened the closet and there's Pinocchio staring at you.
No
is right. I was like, nope, not interested. Mm-hmm. Close that door.
We at one point had one of those sort of floppy clown things
poltergeist.
I feel like it's a thing that in the 70s and 80s elderly relatives would make for children, right? It's sort of like a patchwork clown situation. And they were very creepy. I let those go at some point.
I mean
apologies to my probably like long deceased great aunt who no doubt made those.
On the other hand, you don't worry about it coming over to your bedside and strangling you.
I don't. So. I don't. Good. Yeah, with its little stuffed arms. Okay. Shall we do the news?
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, a lot of people were making clowns of themselves yesterday.
Hey, there's a transition for you.
After the Supreme Court came down with a decision about this Colorado ballot case. This is the one where the Colorado Supreme Court decided that they could, that in Colorado, they could take Trump off the ballot because of the third section of the 14th Amendment, which was designed to keep Confederates who had conspired against the Union off federal ballots. And the Supreme Court took this case, and you and I, and many people with sense, said, this looks like a real reach from the Colorado Supreme Court.
That's right.
Turns out the Supreme Court agreed. Supreme Court of the United States, 9-0. 9-0 against the Colorado Supreme Court, which I don't know if that comes with professional repercussions for the Colorado Supreme Court justices, but hey, you know, not a great look.
No.
Not a great look.
That makes me think now that in order to overcome this right-wing cabal on the Supreme Court, we now have to pack the court with 10 more liberal justices to overcome the 9.
Yes, indeed.
Including Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sotomayor and Elena Kagan.
Right.
I was reminded of when Trump was running and conservatives who were offended by Trump, you know, remained conservative, but they just opposed Trump. And friends of ours would tell me that, you know, like their father would say things like, whatever happened to that George Will? He used to be so conservative. And now we get to say it about that. Whatever happened to that Sotomayor?
Yeah,
she used to be so conservative, so liberal. What happened?
Really? It's even Ketanji Brown Jackson. Like, guys.
Well, you know, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Her brother-in-law is Paul Ryan, I believe. So
that
he's a big MAGA supporter, as you know.
Fair point, Vic.
Yeah, people really kind of had a meltdown.
They lost it a little bit. I think a characteristic reaction is Keith Olbermann.
Oh, boy.
Keith Olbermann, who says, and it's like, I felt like sad that my immediate reaction was like, I guess now these three liberal justices just go under the bus.
Yeah.
And then it happened like clockwork. The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy, Keith Olbermann tweets. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the quote, scare quote, court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. The Supreme Court needs to be dissolved. That's a whole last branch of government he's talking about over here.
That's the judiciary branch.
You learn that very early in school.
You do.
Judiciary is a part of the whole thing.
Does he realize that he is a parody of himself? I mean, does he realize that he's doing exactly what he accuses the other side of doing? Do you think he knows this? I imagine he's smart, not constitutionally smart.
Right.
But I just feel like, I don't know. After Trump lost in 2020, and I had this big argument with certain people, when members of the administration and judges, Bill Barr, the Supreme Court said that there was no grounds to overturn the election results. Do you remember this?
Right.
And people are like, oh, they're completely wrong. And I'm like, okay, you're telling me that Clarence Thomas is, you know, he's, you know, more than him. Or Bill Barr, who is Attorney General, he's a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
And like, nope, they don't know. I know, but they don't know, blah, blah, blah. And they're doing the same thing now. And, you know, when Keith Olbermann says that they lack the comprehension, they're not able to read and interpret the law properly, but somehow he's this second coming of, you know, Oliver Wendell Holmes. It's disturbing.
Well, I think another good reaction is the Colorado Secretary of State, whose name is Jenna Griswold.
Oh, yes.
And this was like part of her push here.
My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November.
Wow, she really turned that around. That was amazing.
Meanwhile, her ideological birds of a feather are all like, burn the court down!
Yeah. Also, the idea that, you know, that Donald Trump, you know, the best thing we need to do is to prevent people from having the right to vote for him or not vote for him.
No, well, that's the pro-democracy position, is that you take someone off the ballot because we can't give people the right to choose
You can't.
Between Trump and someone else. Can I just note, just because it's an interesting constitutional point, that some of the justices agreed. By the way, I should read a little bit about the decision itself before we get too far into this.
Sure.
But one of the arguments was like, look, the 14th Amendment was created not to empower states to treat things differently than the federal government. It was, in fact, the opposite. The 14th Amendment was a remedy, equal protection under the law, for instance, so that former slave states would not be treating citizens or candidates differently from other people because of their former policies, right? And so the idea that this would empower states over the federal government, they argued, not so much.
I was going to say, in terms of the reaction to this unanimous decision, another one was just, you know, if you read some of the social media comments, because people, they all feel the same. They all feel like Keith Olbermann. And to the same effect was one person who had commented, I just didn't know until now how far it stretched.
Yes, the right-wing cabal, conspiracy
that has reached
Ketanji Brown Jackson.
That is correct. Here's the thing, right? The per curiam opinion, as it were.
Yes.
It's just, this is not, everyone's freaking out about this regarding, you know, insurrection.
Right.
And that's not the question
here.
The question is, can a state have the power to remove him from the ballot? So on the late night shows, you know, Stephen Colbert was beside himself and saying he couldn't believe that a unanimous decision, and the audience is booing and says they apparently support insurrectionists. That's not what this is about.
Can I also say that if you've never read a SCOTUS opinion, you should.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Pick on an issue that you're interested in. They're great writers.
They really are.
They're fantastic writers, and their thinking is often clear. The prose is clear. Sometimes in the case of Scalia, it's very biting and funny.
Scalia Dissents, in fact.
Scalia Dissents, a great book that compiles a lot of those cutting opinions and dissents. Read them. You can find out a lot.
Right.
What the court actually decided.
And the people who have such a low opinion, for example, of Clarence Thomas.
Right.
Who probably haven't read his, you know, autobiography or know anything about him, or let alone any of his opinions.
Yeah.
And he's very smart. So, again, we're just talking about Congress having the power and not the states to have the power to remove somebody from federal office. The lawyer, during deliberations, the lawyers from Colorado had no defense when they were asked, can you give us an example of when states have done this? And they didn't have anything to back them up. And so it really is up to Congress. The problem is now Jeremy Raskin, the congressman from Maryland.
Jamie.
He was just saying, well, it's true. It's, you know, supposedly, you know, the court has ruled in this way. So we're going to try to eventually pass a bill that will remove Donald Trump from the ballot.
We
really don't want you voting for him.
Can I say that would be actual democracy in action as opposed to this?
Well, yeah,
if you can get a bill passed, although I don't think it would pass muster once you've passed it constitutionally. But I'll read from SCOTUS blog just a bit about the Supreme Court on Monday ruled that states cannot disqualify former President Donald Trump from the ballot for his role in the January 6, 2021 attacks on the U.S. Capitol. In an unsigned opinion, a majority of the justices held that only Congress and not the states can enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which was enacted in the wake of the Civil War to disqualify individuals from holding office who had previously served in the federal or state government before the war, but then supported the Confederacy against candidates for federal office. All nine justices agreed that Colorado cannot remove Trump from the ballot. All nine. Four justices, Justice Amy Coney Barrett in a separate opinion, and Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson in a joint opinion, argued that their colleagues should have stopped there and not decided anything more. The court went on to say other states also cannot do this. Basically, it stops all of these guys in their tracks.
Illinois or whoever.
Without
Maine.
Having to.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. Did you get a chance to see Donald Trump? His statement when he had a press conference.
No.
And it's interesting because, of course, most of the networks are loath to show Trump.
Right.
Because he goes on these various tirades and then they have to tell you what you're about to hear is disinformation or misinformation. And so what we'll do is we'll filter it. We'll hear it first and then we'll let you know if he says anything that is relevant. And otherwise, you really shouldn't cover your ears because he's going to say a bad thing about illegal immigrants and whatever. But they had to do it because there was such a big news event.
Right.
And the Supreme Court ruling. So they had to say, well, we're going to show Trump and what is he going to say about this? And of course, Trump knows this and he knows this is free media when she used to get a lot of free media in 2016. Yeah. And the media's like, we've learned our lesson. We'll never do it again. And he knows that they have to. So sure enough, Trump goes up there. He briefly mentions the well-argued opinion of this unanimous Supreme Court. And then he was off to the races. And then he was going after deranged Jack Smith. And then he's talking about, you know, he's talking about crime and immigration. And then he's talking about Fannie Willis. And then he's obsessed about how to pronounce her name. I say Fannie. She says Fannie. One N, two N's. And it's like,
I think it's because Fannie is like vaguely dirty. So he can like sort of.
It just keeps on bringing. And Gavin Newsom. So,
of course.
Yeah,
of course.
That's the new one. And, you know, the media is like, I can't believe we had to show that. So anyway, you know, I mean, it's like for me, sometimes Trump reminds me of I may have said this before, the director Waltz in The Godfather, you know, where, you know, in the beginning, he's there with Tom Hagen having this very pleasant, you know, fancy meal. And then by the end, he's telling him to get the hell out of here, you know. So, I mean, that's he just works himself into a lather. He could win this race if he just had some discipline and stayed focused.
Oh,
but you know.
That ship has sailed.
He might win it regardless.
That ship sailed about 77 years ago. I should clarify, by the way, I want to be accurate about the court as possible, although I am not a lawyer. Amy Coney Barrett, in her one-page opinion, agreed with the court that the court's holding that states cannot enforce Section 3 against presidential candidates, and she said that was sufficient to resolve this case. She did not think that they should have weighed in on, quote, the complicated question of whether federal legislation is the exclusive vehicle through which Section 3 can be enforced.
So, all right.
Okay. Just so you guys know.
All right.
That's the exact stuff. Anyway, there's also, can I note that in addition to the bad reactions, it is also important to hearken back to the commentary about this decision before it happened.
Oh, which was like, you know, we know it's going to be a partisan thing, right? This is what you're saying.
Well, there were a bunch of people, and we'll play a little montage. This is a recurring theme on Getting Hammered of experts being very dim and wrong. Okay? Yeah. So
they got ahead of themselves.
So the experts were sure that Trump was done on this one. This is it. We've finally found the thing that will unpresident him.
That's right.
Right? Again, it's the coyote and the roadrunner.
Yeah.
Although I had to withdraw my coyote and roadrunner when it came to the documents case. I do think that might be
might
the
have
one.
Gotten them. Yeah.
Although I sent you that tweet last week from Megyn Kelly. I'm gonna just pull it up and read it real quick.
Yeah.
Trump's ability to be the roadrunner.
Right.
This is Megyn Kelly last week. With the Trump immunity case being accepted by SCOTUS, which we talked about, and what's happening in Georgia, that thing falling apart, Trump may well have pulled the inside straight he needed to beat these cases. New York is a joke. Most people basically agree on that. Georgia is dying/severely delayed. Florida ain't happening before November. And now neither is the J6 DC case. Incredible.
Yeah, that's right. The documents case, which you and I have always agreed is the most serious of all the various charges, it puts prosecutors in a very weird position because if they want to talk about the wrongness and the illegality of possession of illegal documents, there is a current president who also was in possession. And they used to say, the argument was, well, the difference is he fully cooperated. He immediately turned it over.
Mm-hmm.
Not really immediately, since he had it for multiple years and it's on a tape recording.
Like more than a decade.
Yeah.
And
he told his ghostwriter back in, I believe, 2017, oh, yeah, I know where those classified documents are. They're in the garage. Let me go get them. Or something to that effect. So they're in a bad spot.
Yeah. Well, all the experts agreed that, you know, he's done, man. Experts dissect key arguments in Colorado Supreme Court 14th Amendment relay. Legal scholars increasingly raise constitutional argument that Trump should be barred from the presidency. The opposite of politics. A conservative legal scholar says kicking Trump off the ballot is unassailable. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Again, when you're on the wrong side of a 9-0 decision, that's not quite like being on the wrong side of a 6-3 decision. A 6-3 decision is like, okay, a closely divided court. Well,
right, we
really
know how it is,
anymore,
and the problem is these six conservatives, the Trump justices, that's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. Anyway, we'll play a bit of the experts for you, and just be wary about trusting said experts.
We begin tonight with the consequences of insurrection.
Donald Trump is ineligible to serve as president under the Constitution's insurrection clause.
Because he is disqualified, it would be a wrongful act under the election code for the Colorado Secretary of State to list him as a candidate on the presidential primary ballot.
Colorado is executing its state's rights to decide who should be on their own ballot.
Oh, I'm very proud to be a Coloradan and an American today.
This was a real process. It was consideration of a great deal of evidence.
Here's a good one from Joy Reid's show. Slam dunk, why Supreme Court must defend states' rights if Trump ballot exclusion appealed. It's wild to see people like...
It was a... Well,
the
14th
Amendment was a states' rights amendment.
Well, it was a slam dunk 9-0. That's true.
It's a slam dunk. At any rate, can I say, well, actually, I should have started with this. A 9-0 decision on this is the best news that I've heard for the body politic in quite some time.
Yeah, because it really gives, for those people who really felt like this thing was going to be partisanly driven, like the worst thing since Bush v. Gore, right? Yeah. They adore, let's assume that they adore Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. This puts them in a bad spot because they look up to them. They consider them to be, you know, paragons of jurisprudence, and suddenly they feel this way. People started to turn. There were a lot of people on the left who turned on Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the end.
I know. And I got to say, I think this is why I want the court to remain a trusted public institution. It's one of the only public institutions that I believe acts as it should most of the time. The members of the court are collegial. Mm-hmm. They actually discuss important matters amongst each other.
Sure.
They have competing visions that they debate in an intellectually sound way. And I don't disrespect the three liberal justices. No. I think they're wrong sometimes. Sure. I think they're too outcomes based.
Yeah.
But I disagree with them. I don't think that they are like vile, like subversive figures who are like out to kill democracy. Right. And largely, like, I think when you read these opinions, you're like, okay, like you could have come down on either side of this in a lot of cases. And
well, I mean, and I've spoken about this before in a couple occasions that I have met the late Antonin Scalia, you know, and this is not a secret, obviously, because he's spoken about this in the past. He genuinely loved Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They were very good friends and their family, the couples. They would travel together, go out west and horseback ride and go to the mountains and everything else. Ruthie, as he called her. And so, I mean, and I think some of that relationship still exists now because when folks like Elena Kagan are up there and they're talking about their conservative counterparts, they're still very respectful and say very nice things about them. And of course, when Elena Kagan was at Harvard, she actually had hired Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
Because, you know, they needed...
If I remember correctly, I think it was Sotomayor at one point was asked publicly about Clarence Thomas.
Right.
And she like full-throatedly defended him as a wonderful person.
Right.
So I appreciate that part about the court. Let me also note one more
That's
funny...
how conservative they all are. Yeah. They've all been brainwashed.
One more funny sort of reaction story from Mark Joseph Stern, which, like, actually, this is a pretty interesting story. And, you know, this is reporting. He found in the metadata signals that this opinion hadn't exactly looked like this configuration of this opinion before. Basically, okay, Supreme Court's decision on Monday to keep Donald Trump on Colorado's ballot was styled as a unanimous one without any dissents, but the metadata tells a different story. On the page, a separate opinion by the liberal justices is styled as a concurrence in the judgment authored jointly by the trio. In the metadata of the link to the opinion posted by the court, however, this opinion is styled as an opinion concurring in part and dissenting in part, authored not by all three justices, but by Sonia Sotomayor alone. Even a tech-phobic reader can discern this incongruity through careful copying and pasting, piercing the facade of unanimity that the conservative justices sought to present. Okay, I think this is an interesting bit of reporting because these opinions do move around while they get ready to release them, right? This is part of the court. And if you're a court watcher, you're interested in that, like, behind the scenes stuff. But remind me, Vic, is the opinion that they might have released the opinion, or is the opinion that they released the opinion?
Well, it's the opinion that you want is the real opinion.
Okay. Gotcha.
I was thinking maybe they'll have another leaker. Maybe the same person that we'll never catch.
You know what? It's not a facade of unanimity because the opinion they released is unanimous.
That's right.
Yeah. So just... And it goes in breathless, like, what happened? But I won't get into that with you guys. What happened is that they had one version and then they had a different version. And that's how these,
just the way these
folks
things
work
happen.
Together.
That's right.
Okay. So that's that. 2024 is such a simple story.
Yes.
That's what I like about it. You know, it's just not only do we have satisfying, robust candidates who are going to honestly debate a different vision of the world, But there's no complicating factors at
no,
all.
No, not at all. It's very black and white. The interesting thing, again, and Trump mentioned this, which is the more they go after him, you know, in the courts, the stronger he gets.
It's true.
So that normally, you know, somebody is presented with charges, like Bob Menendez of New Jersey, they're toast. They're done for.
Yeah.
This has somehow... he is empowered. And it's not just a somehow mysteriously. It's because people get the sense that these things are, you know, an overreach.
Yes.
And at least certain, many of these particular charges, whether it be the overvaluation of real estate, which was outrageous, and we've spoken about that.
The Alvin Bragg.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
Stormy Daniels. The Stormy Daniels, because that was once a misdemeanor. Now it's suddenly a felony.
And by the way,
the statute of limitations.
The Stormy Daniels one went first, which the Alvin Bragg one going first was a huge problem, because you have the original sin that was Russiagate.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we should talk about this on the show, but there's a bunch of journalists just preparing to do Russiagate again.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? They all keep tweeting like Russia stuff. And it's like, guys, we have done this. He is not a Russian agent. Like, you can criticize him for many things. That's not one of them.
Perhaps there can be maybe they can get a dossier, put it together.
Yeah, like a dossier. And maybe then we could have like a special counsel. I don't know, get into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And FISA warrants. Okay.
So, can we talk about COVID?
Oh, yeah.
There are still people who think about COVID, by the way.
Yes.
The CDC among them. The CDC has shortened its COVID-19 isolation time. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, reporting from USA Today, is updating its COVID-19 guidance so people who test positive for the virus will no longer be directed to isolate at home for 5 days. Because we were all doing that. On Friday, top health officials announced a policy focusing on actions people can take to reduce spreading a variety of common respiratory viruses such as influenza, RSV, and COVID-19. By the way, the fact that these are all being grouped together is news that we have moved on from this novel situation. Those actions include staying at home when sick, staying up to date with vaccines, practicing good hygiene, and improving indoor air quality. The change marks the first time the agency has revised its coronavirus guidelines since 2021, because they're way behind the rest of the population, as public health apparently always is. It is intended for people and employers, not for hospitals or nursing homes that have separate guidance, the CDC said. There was a predictable outrage from the quarters of the internet that still deeply care about COVID.
I read an update in the New York Times.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I want you to brace yourself.
Okay.
Because apparently there is going to be a very big COVID surge that's going to take over this country. And apparently it's coming by late January.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I read that back then. There are actually takeaways. There was an article about the CDC guidance. Mm-hmm. And so here's my takeaway, because I actually wrote these down. COVID apparently resembles the flu. So that's why you should get tested, so you can find out.
Which
because
one it is.
Some, you know, fatigue, sore throat, congestion, flu.
Okay.
And congestion, sore throat, and fatigue, COVID, right? But if it's the flu, the difference is if it's the flu, they say you should stay home until you feel better.
Okay.
However, if it's COVID, you're going to have to stay home until you feel better. The also seniors, not seniors in high school or college, but senior citizens should get the latest booster, because the effects wane after 6 months. So every 6 months, get the new vaccine. The way you get a smallpox vaccine every 6 months, you know, it's the one that was tested on the mice. And the latest variant is JN1.
Okay.
It's mild, but here's an interesting revelation. Those who are older or immunocompromised, more vulnerable.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew that.
This is all new information
and
to me. I'm just hearing this now.
Paxlovid, not for everybody.
Okay.
Right?
The
However,
two for one deal, as I like
Times
to call
does,
it.
The Times does recommend hydration, rest, and Advil.
It's groundbreaking.
No, I'm not making that up. Ibuprofen.
That's from a New York Times piece.
Yeah, that was from a piece. So, you know, just, you know.
In 2024.
Just get ready for it in 2024. I do want to, you know, you talk about how there are people out there, right? Mm-hmm. So, what do? I make a big mistake of clicking on the comment section. I always do this because there are a lot of people there and it's really gone to them. And I only have one. I have one highlighted for you. Okay. This is just some commenter reader. And this is, quote, "No one enters my house without a mask, not even the police or EMS workers. No exceptions. I have a big sign on my front door to that effect. Don't let in those workers without the mask. Keep a supply of masks on hand to give out as needed."
Okay. There's a sickness there, but I'm not sure it's COVID.
Wow.
Okay. No, there is. Look, I think that the segment of the population that still lives in this way is not large, but is vocal. There's, in fact, a protest of the CDC's new COVID guidance planned for this month. I don't know how they're going to get near each other. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of precautions for that. But they're calling for a 10-day isolation and two negative tests before ending the isolation. So I'm going to go.
It freaks them out, I'm sure, if they're watching on television and seeing, like, sporting events.
Yeah.
That must freak them out.
Oh, so much must.
Like, how can they be doing this?
This is the thing. It's like, I think it's sad. It's just sad. And there are people who are living this way who don't need to.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's certain people who do.
There are severely immunocompromised people who have a different story and they have to approach life differently.
Absolutely.
For all things, including flu and RSV.
Which are really bad.
But there are people living this way who do not have to.
Yeah.
Who have been really amped up on this for a long time because public health, frankly, made them more scared than they needed to be. And it's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame because they're going to suffer. Their lives are going to suffer more than the effects of a case of COVID would mean for them.
Yeah.
So, well, this is, hey, I'm glad for the CDC. I want to congratulate the CDC on
there
this epic Now It Can Be Told, which is that, the flu and COVID, it turns out, are kind of the same.
They're both bad. Don't spread it. That's the point. Don't go to school if you have either.
Yeah, that was, by the way, that was the key for all schools that successfully stayed open.
Oh.
Stay home when you're sick. That was it. That was it. Okay. All right. What are we moving on to? Do we want to do crime news?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. A little bit of crime news. Actually, a lot of crime news. I just want to run through a couple of these.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading about Oregon.
Yeah.
Oregon in the summer of 2020 decriminalized drug possession. Is it drug use and possession, I think?
Yes. Even like hard drugs.
Yes. Everything. And
was this all in the wake of George Floyd? Is that why?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like some bad decisions were made. And here we go. So the Oregon legislature has now passed a bill, overwhelmingly, it turns out, that would make possession of a small amount of certain drugs a misdemeanor in the state, moving to recriminalize substances like fentanyl roughly 3 years after the state became the first in the nation to decriminalize the possession and personal use of all drugs. The measure, HB 4002, now goes to Democratic Governor Tina Kotek's desk for her consideration. Kotek has not publicly said whether she supports the measure, though in late January, the governor joined local officials in declaring a fentanyl state of emergency in downtown Portland. That's where they've got like just zombies on the street and people deeply suffering. Like, and this is just it's a bad scene. Asked about the governor's next steps regarding the legislation, Kotek's office did not indicate whether she would sign it, but said any changes to Measure 110 would have to pass the balancing test of concrete, measurable, improved outcomes for individuals who are struggling with addiction and accountability,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, those improved outcomes is what you see on the street. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I am healthily skeptical of the drug war.
Yeah.
And yet we now have some evidence that perhaps going this direction did not work out in these localities.
But they had to find out the hard way.
I guess laboratories of democracy, but woo.
I mean,
it's a bunch of things together, right? It's like hollowing out your city center by telling people not to come.
Right.
It is decriminalizing.
Yeah.
It is defunding police or telling them not to police. It is not prosecuting people who are guilty of crimes and letting people just like riot all 2020.
Remember
summer.
The CHOP zone or whatever it was called?
live in their separate zone.
Yeah.
All of these things compound, it turns out, to create a pretty bad scene.
You know, Oregon could have saved themselves a decent amount of pain had they actually voted for Christine Drazen in 2022.
Yeah.
But instead, they had to continue down this road and then find out, hey, you know, this idea of free drugs, and we would encourage people to seek treatment. The free drugs part might be the issue. We're not sure. But as you were just mentioning, Mary Catherine, it's not just Oregon. This is a number of places.
So a couple of other places, you're feeling the pendulum swing back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we've spoken about this, hopefully.
So in Progressive San Francisco, this is reporting from the Free Press. Voters frustrated by the twin crisis of homelessness and overdose deaths are poised to back a series of law and order ballot proposals. Notably, the city's Democratic mayor, London Breed, supports those measures. So she's trying to survive, as are most people who have to walk the streets of San Francisco at any given time.
Right.
In deep blue Washington, D.C., council members face recall efforts amid rising violent crime. It has gotten very bad here. And we've talked about it. I'm a rational person when it comes to crime statistics. Mm-hmm. I will look at like how likely is it that something will happen to me? And I don't want to get overly in my head about this.
Yeah.
But my behavior is different when I go to the city than it used to be.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm not just like blithely walking blocks to where I need to go.
No. And it's everywhere. I mean, again, they lessened the penalties for carjacking and suddenly the incidence of carjacking is up 82%.
So strange.
It's funny how that works.
So strange.
So they're trying to reverse that now. I don't know if it's too little or too late, but it had gotten to the point where, as we now know, the car, you know, and they're looking for nice cars
right.
to take, not, you know, beat up cars, which is why you'll find the carjackings take place in very expensive and nice neighborhoods in Northwest, including in Georgetown. And apparently it was a car that belonged to, I believe it was Biden's granddaughter.
Yes.
And that's where the Secret Service opened fire.
I believe that was a Land Rover situation, which, you know, very nice car. See, I used to have crappy cars before Steve came along. Now here I am with a decent car.
Yeah,
it's super new, but it looks good.
I tell Kate, you know, if you want to drive the 2007 Highlander with all the stains, you know, in the car, just leave it unlocked. See if
so far no luck.
Somebody wants it. Yeah.
Crime related as well, but on a federal level, Mayorkas, who's the head of Homeland Security, who was recently impeached by the House by a narrow vote.
Yes.
That may or may not go to the Senate. Have they made a decision on that?
I'm not sure
yet. Schumer was trying to wriggle out of having to adjudicate that at all, which I'm not sure you can do. But at any rate, he went on the Sunday shows this week, and he was asked twice if Laken Riley's killer, this is the 22-year-old in Athens, Georgia, should have been deported. And we'll just listen to his answer.
A 22-year-old nursing student, I know you've been following this, Laken Riley in the state of Georgia was murdered allegedly by an undocumented Venezuelan migrant. The suspect had been detained by Border Patrol upon crossing, released with temporary permission to stay in the country. He then went on allegedly to commit crimes twice, once in New York for driving a scooter without a license and once in connection with a shoplifting case in Georgia. Did those states and their law enforcement communicate to the federal government that this had happened? Should this man have been deported?
A few thoughts. First, Margaret, first and foremost, an absolute tragedy, and our hearts break for and our prayers are with the family, number one. Number two, and importantly, as a prosecutor, having prosecuted violent crime and other crimes for 12 years, one individual is responsible for the murder, and that is the murderer. And we work very closely with state and local law enforcement to ensure that individuals who pose a threat to public safety are indeed our highest priority for detention and removal.
But are you saying there that the federal government had been informed about this individual and the alleged crimes he had committed in those states? Because he could have been deported if that was the case. Was there a breakdown in the system?
So, Margaret, there are a number of cities around the country that have varying degrees of cooperation with the immigration authorities. We firmly believe that if a city is aware of an individual who poses a threat to public safety, then we would request that they provide us with that information so that we can ensure that that individual is detained.
So he can't say
if the facts so warrant.
He can't say it.
No.
He can't say it because it's not their policy.
Right, right. He denied it multiple times and then the cock crowed twice. So it's a little reference. It's Lent. So,
yeah.
Okay, so here's what's interesting also. Before we taped the show, Peter Ducey, they had the White House press briefing, and Peter Ducey, who is the White House correspondent for Fox,
right.
he asked Karine Jean-Pierre a question that I'd been wondering, which is, Joe Biden, we have the State of the Union coming up, is he going to mention Laken Riley?
Right.
At all. Anytime in the future, perhaps. And Karine Jean-Pierre said, first, let us say every time we have the opportunity to say this is a horrible thing that happened, and our hearts go out to her, her family, her friends.
That's an improvement from their original responses.
Does the president have any, is he going to say anything she said? I have nothing to share.
I don't know if you know this, but the president's son died. I'm just saying that's their response to everything.
Oh, right. Oh, you mean Bo. I'm thinking about, I'm sorry.
No, Hunter's still with us.
Oh, yes, yes. God that's bless. Right. That's right.
No, I'm just saying that's their response to everything.
This is funny because she did manage to add after she says, I have nothing to add, but I would add that the Republicans turned down a bipartisan bill.
Ah, there you go, there you go.
So.
There you go. No, I would argue he, of course, won't mention her. This is not, liberals get to decide what's a say your name say her name situation, and George Floyd is a say the name situation.
Sure.
Lincoln Riley is not a say the name situation. No. He won't mention it in the speech. We know this, I think, because of his record, where he has left out even members of the American military service, 13 Marines who died in a politically inconvenient to him suicide bombing during the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. Yeah. He didn't mention those folks. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll mention the guardsmen and women killed in Jordan, but I would think that they're probably pretty low priority for him.
Again, no bad memories. Please don't bring up the bad stuff, especially
anything that's like plausibly has anything to do with his policies, regardless of how sympathetic the person is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, this is the Mayorkas problem. Mayorkas cannot say anything that would contradict his boss's policies. He can't.
Right.
He would be, inadvertently admitting that, all the Trump executive orders that Biden reversed on day one were a mistake.
Yeah.
And that we need to. And again, now we're talking about polling that shows a majority of Americans now support building a wall.
Right.
And I just want to throw into the mix of this with this border crisis, the story that Raul Ortiz, who is now the former head of Customs and Border from 2021 to 2023, he said he never met with Biden even once.
Jeez.
So.
Jeez. By the way, Mayorkas says, and they do this little dance, which is the Randy Weingarten dance, where they sort of say the thing, but if you actually look like even a millimeter thick, you know that they're full of it.
Yes.
It's because he says public threats should be deported. The problem is that this public threat, alleged public threat, could not be identified as such because his crimes were not violent enough up until this point.
Right.
So I would argue. If you come across the border, like one strike and you're done.
Right.
You've already come across the border. Okay?
That's already technically illegal.
Yeah. You're here. You're here by our largesse already.
Yeah.
Right.
It takes, I mean, the whole process in a perfect world is, you apply for citizenship. You take the test to have some sort of fundamental, rudimentary knowledge of how the government works and its history. And then you raise your right hand, the pledge, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so we're far from that.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Berkeley riot?
Oh, right. The Berkeley riot that nobody wants to talk about?
No. Yeah. So I want to bring this to our attention because it's not a big news story.
What is going on?
Back to anti-Semitism on campus, which, by the way, I saw an account from a mother of a Jewish student at two Ivy League schools. I believe it was Columbia was one of them, and her other kid is at Princeton. Mm-hmm. And she said that Princeton has been fantastic about cracking down on things that are not speech.
All right.
Keeping pro-Palestinian/Hamas groups sort of safely cordoned from people who are doing counter-protests, not letting them harass Jewish students. And again, just drawing the line where it should be drawn.
Yeah.
So props to them. I love to hear when a college is actually doing the right thing, standing up for speech, and standing up for keeping students safe from actual violence and threats. Okay. However, in Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, this is reported in the Free Beacon, which has been following this story. And this is like the second day story, but let me just get the University of California, Berkeley administrators have offered no apology to Israeli lawyer Ran Bar Yoshevat, whose speech to a campus Jewish group was abruptly canceled by the university after violent protesters choked a female student attendee, spit in another attendee's face, and broke into the auditorium where this lawyer waited on stage. "I've had no apology," he told the Washington Free Beacon. "No one from Berkeley has contacted me since or tried to contact me even." Only about 10 to 12 student attendees had been able to make it to the university venue, where he had been moved for the third time when violent protesters broke down the doors and university police abruptly declared that the event would be shut down. Following this announcement, the lawyer said, an unidentified staffer told him that he would have to leave. The staffer and security guards then showed him and his wife down a backstage corridor so that they could leave without having to navigate the violent protesters. Before the lawyer could leave, however, two fully masked protesters jumped on stage and approached him with their hands in their pockets without interference from security, and saw where he and his wife were going. He said the university escort showed him down the corridor, opened the door to the street, and left him and his wife outside alone with a good luck. The couple had no idea where they were or how to get to their car until a staff member for the group sponsoring the speech, his speaking tour, found them.
Wow. That's not even a hopeful.
Wowza.
That doesn't even come across to me as a hopeful good luck or a wishful thing.
Oh, no.
It sounds like a taken good luck. Good luck, you know?
Exactly.
It's just like
exactly.
They're doomed now. But yeah. Please. I know it's hard to comprehend that this happened. Number one.
Yeah.
And number two, that Berkeley, until they got pushed and prodded by certain members of the media, including mm-hmm. Beacon, were like, we have no idea who these people were.
I guess we'll
never find out. And of course, and number three, that the rest of the media doesn't seem to be wanting to report on this.
Yeah.
Whereas, could you imagine if the choking and the spitting happened to, if they were black students or
any other minority, Muslim students,
it would be, boy.
It would be the number one story in the universe.
Yeah. Oh. They went out of field.
And this is the Jewish Journal reporting because there are precious few outlets.
Yes.
Says a Jewish UC Berkeley student who requested anonymity told the Journal in a phone interview that she was choked by pro-Palestinian protesters Monday evening. The protesters were trying to shut down an event featuring a former IDF soldier as a speaker. The event, by the way, is called Israel at War, Combat the Lies. And it was organized by Bears for Israel, students supporting Israel at Berkeley. Brave people.
Yeah.
Antifa. At any rate. Minutes before the event was to start, a crowd of about 200 protesters began to surround the building. University Chancellor Carol Christ and Executive Vice Chancellor and Provost Benjamin Hermelin said in a message to the campus community on Tuesday afternoon, doors were broken open and the protesters gained unauthorized entry to the building. Well, because no one was there to stop them or prepared to do so. The event was canceled and the building was evacuated to protect the speaker and the members of the audience who were not, I will note, protected.
Yeah. What is it going to take? You know?
Something very, very bad.
Because if this is allowed
and this becomes
back to being like casual anti-Semitism, you know, I mean, sort of general attitude, of course this is going to happen, you know,
from time to time.
Like it's the 1930s in Germany or something.
Again,
it's,
this is not speech, right? This is not speech. You're allowed to protest an event. You're not allowed to shout it down. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to jump on stage with the speaker.
And get physical.
You're not allowed to physically assault students. Apparently, the male student who was spit on they also yelled Jew at him.
Sure.
It's like wild.
If you're a student on a number of these schools, I mean, and if you're practicing and you wear a kippah or, you know, you are visibly Jewish, what do you do when you walk out to go to class anymore?
I don't know. And I got to tell you, it takes
courage.
Universities, as you say, what does it take? Every time they don't enforce very seriously the actual rules and lines on these things, if they don't expel the students who put their hands on other students, right, you will incentivize more.
Of course.
And by the way, when something awful does happen, more awful than this even, I try my best to take other people's positions in good faith and assume that they have good faith, but on campus, if something terrible does happen that is more terrible than this, the reaction will be somehow that it was the Jewish student's fault for existing on campus and being Jewish or Israeli or whatever it is, just like it will be a repeat of the October 7th rationale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they're here. This person is aggressing just by being here.
Right.
And so we had to attack this person.
Right. That's right.
That's going to be the argument. And it'll... Y'all got to get a handle on this.
Also, why did you slam your face into the Hamas supporter's fist?
Yes. Why did you do that? It was so aggressive.
Terrible.
It was so aggressive. Can we talk about Kamala Harris?
Sure. Oh, right. Of course.
Do you have a... First of all, Kamala is on the Middle East, so I'm sure we'll have a solution any minute now.
Yeah. Well, much like she was at the borders are.
Could you decipher this?
I went to the School of Foreign Service.
You went to the School of Foreign Service. I know you know things.
Yeah. Ceasefire, if I get a lot of applause, people like that. Okay, ceasefire. No, horrible. Wait a minute. They did terrible things. Yes, that too. Again, if you are writing for Veep and you come up with the stuff that that jumble that she comes up with, they'd say, no, this is a nobody would do something like this. No one would say that. That would make no sense.
Yeah, and we'll play a bit of her speech.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire. Yeah. For at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table. This will get the hostages out and get a significant amount of aid in. This would allow us to build something more enduring, to ensure Israel is secure, and to respect the right of the Palestinian people to dignity, freedom, and self-determination.
She calls for an immediate temporary ceasefire, but what she's saying is like directly contradicting that. So she's, I can't make sense of her.
Again, there is a real obvious reasons why she polls worse than Joe Biden. And look, there's a lot of pressure coming from the administration now to force, and Hamas is saying that the United States needs to insist. This is the only thing that's going to save them.
Right.
A ceasefire, because they're coming right down to, I guess it's Rafah, and they don't want them coming in there because this is the redout. This is their stronghold.
Yeah, and they want to flood back up to the north.
They do. And so they need time and they need aid. And the U.S. provided, of course, that aid, you know.
Yes, airdrops.
The airdrop, because, and just like when that awful riot that happened over the trucks, the food, you know, the aid trucks. It is because, of course, they have to fight Hamas to get those supplies.
Yes.
That is what's happening. For Israel, I think all the stuff Kamala Harris is saying, or Joe Biden saying, the administration, all these people protesting in the West, there is no other option other than removing Hamas. They cannot. It would be disastrous if they came up with some ceasefire where Hamas stays in power and they kept the hostages.
Yeah. Hamas, by the way, won't even release a list of how many hostages are still alive.
No.
And they have been gone for 150 plus days now.
Yeah. And they claim that because they don't know, but...
Two of them tiny children.
Yeah.
Two of them are tiny children.
It's really, you know...
And some of them are women. Not that the men don't matter.
Yeah.
Because they also should not have their freedom taken from them.
Right. And the other part of this equation, of course, is, this mounting pressure on Israel for a ceasefire, opening the border, allowing people in and moving around. You know, there is another border that Gaza shares with Egypt.
Yeah,
Egypt is not letting. They don't want.
No. There's real serious razor wire up there.
Yeah, and nobody and they're getting a break.
Yeah, so she's.
Are they? I mean, they're getting a pass rather.
Yes, she's somehow saying immediate ceasefire and also reiterating the administration's unwavering commitment to the security of Israel and its right to defend itself. It's like you can't have both all the time in this way, and
certainly not
with the eloquence of Kamala Harris as your tool, right?
It's not exactly a sort of bolstering one's confidence.
It really isn't. What do we have else on the list? We can finish up here quickly.
Oh, well, we do have the lighter stuff, which is, of course.
Oh, yeah. We got to have some patriotic eagle news.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Eagle news. We should have a news flash for that. There is a cam on a pair of bald eagle parents. Their eggs are going to hatch soon, and you can watch them. The time to see some newly hatched baby eagles has almost arrived, and parents Jackie and Shadow, I'm sure I love those names. If I was naming eagles, it would not be that. Let me tell you. Sorry, Jackie and Shadow. God, I'm going to get pecked to death. I'm sorry.
Shouldn't they be more of like a pair like Jackie and John if you're thinking Kennedy? I don't know. What's that?
Yes.
Okay.
They should. All right. Sorry. That was an aside. And parents Jackie and Shadow are both passionately committed to keeping their eggs warm. Bald eagle Jackie laid the first of three eggs on January 25th, with two more within the next few days, according to the Friends of Big Bear Valley, a conservation organization that operates a live cam of the nest. Eggs usually hatch after about 35 days, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and fans are keeping an eagle eye on the nest. I love, gotta use a pun in the, gotta use the wordplay, which is located in Big Bear Valley in the San Bernardino Mountains of Southern California. I'm surprised they're having kids with the tax rates in California.
I know, not an incentive.
Hey, good for you guys, Jackie and Shadow. Friends of Bear Valley on February 29th launched Pip Watch, which allows fans to monitor for the first tiny holes or cracks in eggshells. Fans can peep all day long thanks to a solar-powered 24-hour live webcam trained on the nest. Jackie's 12 is larger and can fit over the nest of the top of the eggs more easily. Shadow 10 often wants to turn. Oh, they're like older parents. I feel you. I feel you, Jackie and Shadow.
Goodness.
I don't know how old bald eagles get, but I feel like 10 and 12 seems old. I'm an expert, guys.
I was going to say, we don't have Jack Hanna on the show, so we don't know. But please.
Apparently they've been fighting each other. After her full nights on the eggs, Jackie sometimes calls for Shadow in the early dawn. Mm-hmm. This is like co-parenting. This is so nice to see. Shadow instantly comes in to take over, Friends of Big Bear Valley said in a Sunday Post. But the past few days, he has been more stubborn than ever about refusing to leave when Jackie returns. So Shadow sitting on those eggs, and he's like, I'm a proud daddy. I'm not giving in. Are these just two moms? Are these two moms?
Do these
eagles have two moms? No, I just want to be accurate about what's happening here. Is this a partnership? Yeah, it's a man and a woman. I mean, okay, not that
male and a female.
Not that gender is real, and that he couldn't have decided that he is now the woman in this relationship. But okay, so we've clarified that. On Thursday, Jackie let Shadow take over for an hour. She waited for him to move aside when she returned, then bit his beak when he wouldn't let her resume her duties. Shadow eventually gave in, as they all do, ladies. Keep it up.
You got to remember, in the end, the mom gets very sensitive,
yeah,
emotional, yeah, and you wouldn't want to ruffle her feathers.
Ah!
In other eagle-related news.
Yes, we should play a little bit of Jason Kelsey.
Yeah, Jason Kelsey.
Retirement speech.
Oh.
Thanks for coming, guys. We'll see how long this lasts. Not a good start. There we go.
He's leaving the Philadelphia Eagles after a long career there, a long successful career there as the center. He, of course, has become much more famous in the past couple of years because the Kelsey brothers faced off against each other in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Travis Kelsey of the Kansas City Chiefs won that matchup, although Jason has a Super Bowl ring as well. And then, of course, Travis Kelsey began dating Taylor Swift. So now the Kelseys are like the most famous family in the world. But Jason is a real wholesome dude. We like this guy.
Yeah.
He's married to Kylie Kelsey, who's like a collegiate athlete, cool chick extraordinaire. Love this gal. They have three girls, and he waxes poetic about football and family. And when a grown man does that, I have to be emotionally prepared.
That works for you?
Football and fatherhood? Yes.
He's all man, and I guess, you know, when you're that size, you can cry and people are not making fun of him.
Nobody
for getting emotional about his wife. But I'm so glad. I hope they are. I hope that's, you know, they're I wish them many years together, because, you know.
And you can just tell your wife, like, until you get some power press in, you can't be crying in public about
it. Did it again this morning. How many burpees do I have to do? Burpees are ridiculous. Okay.
You know what? I bet that Jason Kelsey and Kylie Kelsey, they're sharing household duties just like Shadow and Jackie, you know? It's a partnership.
Yeah, no, I can...
Although I do not condone the physical attack of Jackie on Shadow. That is...
Right.
Like, domestic violence.
Yes. It's what happened to Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
When his wife attacked him, you know, that's not cool.
Don't do it, guys.
That wraps up this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. And I do want to say, my wife, Kate, she did... Finally, she normally just listens to the show.
Yeah.
But my daughter explained, of course, you can watch the video on YouTube.
And the youngs know what they're doing. Yeah.
And so she said, this is really interesting. I said, what do you think about it? And my wife said, Mary Catherine looks great. And you can follow me on Twitter at Victorina Mattis.
I am at MK Hammer on Twitter, at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. You can follow the podcast at Getting Hammered Podcast. I am on Meghan McCain's YouTube show called Citizen McCain this week. And I was on Ruthless, if you want to go listen there.
Great show.
So check me out in either of those two places. Thanks for Getting Hammered Responsibly. This has been a Nebulous Media Podcast.